Pleasure to be here with you guys. It looks like you got a big turnout. Some of you have heard me speak before, others have not. I've been as far south as College Station, up in Idaho, all around. But bottom line, what I want to really drive home today is that while a lot of you may think we don't know what's going to happen 2 hours from now, and there really isn't any point forecasting what may happen 2 months from now, I want to show you a little bit of evidence that can maybe take some of the voodoo that I do and make it at least a little bit more applicable to your business in terms of risk management. Those of you that follow me know that I don't BS around, and I do not sit on the fence when it comes to making a weather forecast. Because sitting on the fence when you're doing weather with agriculture, it does you absolutely no good. So I would rather be wrong and give you a correct answer in terms of what I think you should do versus I don't know, and then have you go solicit information from somebody else. So I've got a lot of info to get through for you today. As far as questions are concerned at the end, if you've got them, that's great, but I'm going to provide all my contact information at the very end. So if you want to fire me email, look me up on Twitter. If you like what I have to say today, please give me the feedback. If you don't like what I have to say, please give me the feedback. So let's get started today. We're talking about long-range forecast here, and a lot of you that know me, I know, hear me talk a lot about El Nino, La Nina, and what the oceans are doing around the world. Well, right now, things have changed significantly from what we've been dealing with off and on for the past several years. One of those things is this right here, and where you see that oval, where you see the blue and the green, that is ocean water there that is cooler than average by, in some cases, almost 5 degrees Celsius right now. That's pretty significant, considering we've been talking about the Pacific being in a fairly warm state. We had a super El Nino a couple years ago. We're basically doing the complete flip-flop from that, and it has global weather implications. So that's something that we're going to start with right out of the gate. Another thing that gets a little less attention is up here in the North Pacific, and right now what we're dealing with is at least cooler conditions than what we've seen here in parts of this area, where it used to be just an absolute blowtorch there going up into the Gulf of Alaska. So when these oceans blink in terms of their temperature, and not just little changes, but some bigger changes like what we're seeing here, it proves significant to us here in the Western High Plains in terms of what weather and not just short-term weather, but also long-term weather has in store for us. If we look at an ENSO forecast, and for those of you that say, well, what's ENSO? ENSO stands for El Nino and the Southern Oscillation. It just simply is a gauge on whether or not we're going to have an El Nino or a La Nina episode. So what we're doing right now is all of these squares, diamonds, circles over here, those are all different computer models that are forecasting the same thing. They're looking to see whether or not we are going to have an El Nino or a La Nina. This year, most of those models, basically all of them, are forecasting a weak to maybe slightly moderate La Nina episode down here. That yellow line is the mean forecast of all the models, or essentially the average, if you will. So anything that is about negative 0.5 or lower for 3 consecutive months is what NOAA defines as being a La Nina episode. And I think not only are we there right now, you can see it in the weather pattern that we're dealing with, but we're going to be here for a little while longer. In fact, we don't completely come up here to about neutral until a little bit later in the spring, which sucks for a lot of us in eastern Colorado and in the western high plains, because we bank on spring moisture. If we don't get spring moisture, that's a problem. We can have a dry November, a dry December, January, February, whatever. But if we don't get that March, April moisture, it paves the way for not only drought expansion, but also drought intensification. And that's one of the things that I'm a little bit concerned about today. If you haven't seen the drought monitor, I'm sure a lot of you have already. I'm going to kind of breeze through this very, very quickly, but you can see a couple of things that are of note. A few months ago, we had the lowest record drought area in the whole country for about the past 15 years. And that has kind of flip-flopped a little bit, where we're starting to see drought creep go on here in the southern plains, obviously here in the southwest, and then the real trouble spots, which have been problematic now for months, up here across the western Dakotas and northeastern portions of Montana. So drought is definitely coming back to the forefront in many of the agricultural producing areas in the United States. In fact, the past 30 days, this is the past 30-day accumulated precip, this percentage of normal, okay, obviously brown is bad, green is good. There's a hell of a lot more brown on that map than there is green. And for good reason, because of the way the weather pattern is set up. But what you can do is look at what the weather pattern is doing right now that is generating this thing, and you can do somewhat of a projection forward. Well, we are dry in the southwest. We are dry in the southern plains, especially where that dark brown is. We are still somewhat dry central and northern plains, and you can see some wetter than average areas here and also in the Ohio Valley. I think this map, while it may not be a perfect roadmap for what we're going to be dealing with, it's a pretty significant tell for where we're headed going forward. So, and I have some other evidence that I think will kind of show that as we get deeper into this. So I wanted to show you what the weather forecast pattern looks like for the next 15 days across the country. This is an upper level weather map right here where you're seeing the oranges and that little ridge right there. That's where you're warm and dry, where you've got the blues and these little troughs right here. That's where your weather pattern's a bit more active. So this is the forecast pattern for today. Obviously, here in the Western High Plains, we're dealing with a pretty decent day. Little system coming through the Dakotas. Big old storm up here in the Aleutian Islands, which is pretty typical for this time of year. That's the forecast for Friday. Pretty flat flow here across the Western U.S. Decent weather here in the Western High Plains. That trough is trying to make some inroads here toward British Columbia and into Canada. There's Sunday. Storm system noticeably weaker than what it was. Is digging its way here through the Great Basin and the Northern Rockies. But something that I want you to notice here is this guy, this ridge that is building behind this storm system. Because I think that's going to prove to be pretty significant, because by Tuesday, look what we got. We have a massive blocking ridge of high pressure that extends up here into the Northwest Territories. Anytime you have something like that that goes up, you have to have something that comes down. And that's going to carve out a trough and active weather, and what will inevitably be the coldest air so far this season for the eastern United States. Pretty significant deal for anybody interested in natural gas or any type of energy in the eastern U.S. Because it's going to be persistent. Anytime you have something this pronounced here, this pronounced here, this pronounced here, this pronounced here, it is a blocking pattern, and it is extremely hard to break down. So that is Tuesday. That's Thursday. Looks pretty familiar. What are we dealing with in the Western High Plains? That garbage north to northwesterly flow. It doesn't bring us hardly any moisture, but it brings us frequent cold fronts that stirs up the wind. Eastern U.S., pretty active. This is what it looks like next Saturday. Same pattern. Again, very hard to break down. There's Monday. So again, that takes us through, the 11th of December? There's the 13th of December right there. It's the same thing. Now again, we're talking about 15 days out as far as the forecast is concerned. And I understand that there's going to be a little bit of wiggle room right there. But when the main players are as significant as what I've shown you here, that suggests a pretty high confidence forecast in that. Which basically means if you're looking for any significant snow here in the Western High Plains, I'm pretty pessimistic on that, at least through the middle part of December. And as you'll see through my presentation, probably even longer than that. This behind me now is the snowfall pattern for all La Nina events. Okay, whether they're weak, strong, moderate, whatever, this is usually what happens here with La Nina events in terms of snowfall from October through about April. Folks down here in Arizona, New Mexico, southeast Colorado, western Kansas, western Nebraska, panhandles, whatever, the pseudo Dust Bowl area right here is a problem for a La Nina episode. Pacific Northwest is okay, a little better up this way. But again, remember that above average moisture we were seeing for the past 30 days? Sure looks a lot like that. Remember the drought creep that was coming up here to the north? Sure kind of looks like that. So like I said, it's not necessarily a perfect roadmap, but when you take what's happened in the past 30 days or so and you look at something like that, like I said, it can be a pretty significant tell. So find your home on there. If you're in the blue, hooray. If you're in the brown, well, yeah, that sucks. But also up here, as a weather forecaster, it's really hard for me to forecast a lot of moisture when you're dealing with a drought. You can see computer model run after model run come through, and it may say, oh, big snowstorm or this or that. But a lot of times these models don't understand the mechanism of a drought and that drought feeds drought. And then when you get something regional like what you're dealing with in northeast Montana or the western Dakotas, it's pretty hard to break down. I think things may get a little better as we go forward in that region. It just takes a little bit of time. So let's look at some of the computer models that I analyzed through all of this. This first one is called the NMME. It's the North American Multi-Model Ensemble. It's 8 computer models, and they take the average of that, and they spit out what they think is going to happen. So we're going to look at that in terms of moisture here for December. So what you're looking at in December, where you're seeing the brown areas, that's where the model is suggesting at least a better than average risk of below average precipitation, and where you're seeing the greens a little bit better. So as I said, up here in the northern plains, maybe a little bit of relief. Maybe not gangbusters drought ending relief, but maybe at least a little bit better. And I think up here you'll do a little bit better with that north or northwesterly flow than obviously what we do down here in the a little bit farther south in the western high plains. Here's January. So again, you could see in the Midwest, Corn Belt area, they're doing pretty good. We're really never average. The gentleman that spoke before me, we're never average. We either have too much or not enough, and then the powers that be divide by 2, and they say that's what you should get. Well, that what you should get never happens, so I don't understand why we even talk about it. It's either too much or not enough. So, given what we know about La Nina and its tendencies to do this, that, and the other thing, where I'm seeing white here and a little bit of brown, I would say that this area is probably going to end up being drier than average with a better shot of wetter than average up here. Again, that's January. There's February. You got a little bit of brown here, eastern Colorado, Panhandle region. Again, nothing gangbusters up here, and also some dryness down here on the Gulf Coast. February. March. Right up through eastern Colorado. Northern part, a little bit better. And again, it's that pattern, is it not? Wetter than average here. Again, dumps into the Midwest. You're dry down here. I'm not sure why Texas, the central part of Texas, is in the white. You got brown on both ends. That's going to be dry. Okay? April. This is what really troubles me somewhat. It's like I said, in western high plains, you cannot put a dry March and a dry April together because usually you're too far gone by the time May gets there to do you any good, especially if the wind's blowing every day and it gets, you know, warmer than what it should be. So this model is not exactly being kind to us here, western Nebraska, southward through eastern Colorado into the panhandles. May's forecast, pretty dry. And again, I want to qualify this and say, well, we're talking about May, and this is end of November. Why are you even discussing that? Because I'm not trying to run the bases in the ballpark here, folks. I'm just simply trying to get in the ballpark. It's not about the specifics when you're talking about a six-month forecast. So if I can get the trend right, I believe that trend can help you be a better business person. Am I wrong or am I right? You guys like the trends? I would think so. There's June. It's the same type of a pattern where you're dealing with that dryness in many areas that had dryness in the spring. And that's what I'm talking about. When drought gets organized like that, it feeds on itself and becomes harder and harder to break down. Let's look at another model here. This model's out of Japan, and the medium at looking at this thing is terrible. So I'm going to beg for your forgiveness on this because I have nothing to do with organizing this garbage on a map. Okay? But it's the same scale here, where you're seeing browns, that's where it's drier than average. Greens is wetter than average. Again, out here in the western U.S., remember that blocking ridge that I was talking about? If that blocking ridge persists, it's going to be a big roadblock for storms getting into California. Well, what happens when we have a roadblock of storms in California? Our storms here in the western high plains come from that way. And if there's nothing coming through that way, that's bad news for us. So a lot of times with these models, it's not about taking their specifics and driving that home. It's seeing what they're doing and maybe some of what they're not doing that can actually end up being a little bit better tell for us. But this is December, January, February. Pretty bleak in the west. Northern plains, some white there, but, you know, again, nothing crazy. This is March, April, May. Again, here's some brown up in the northern plains. And in part of the western part of the Corn Belt, the west is not necessarily in good shape through that time. And we've got stuff happening down here in Texas. That's June, July, August. Plenty of brown on the map right there, especially Texas. I would expect that to also end up farther west in the western high plains too, if I was painting that picture for that model. So that's two models there indicating that there's likely going to be some sort of drought enhancement, or as I like to call it, drought creep, that starts to take place from the southern plains. And we can already see that happening right now. This is another model. Yellows, browns, you're drier than average. Greens, you're wetter than average. This is for December. Dry California. If you're dry in California, Arizona, New Mexico, chances are you're going to be dry here because there aren't any storms kicking through here. Not much wetter than average on the map right there for December. There's January. Wetter than average up in this area, again, like that one map that I showed you. Dryness here, and we're wet here. And that is really a hallmark of a La Nina episode, folks. When you're wet in these two areas, and then dry down here across the southern tier. There's February. Wet north, dry south. March. April. May. Get my drift? You folks in southwest Nebraska, northeast Colorado, northwest Kansas? Where are my Texas folks today? Raise your hand if you're from Texas. A few of you? Pretty interesting stuff. Yeah. June. Interesting pattern here, but again, it's June. I mean, we're talking months ahead. So statistically speaking, your forecast is obviously just going to get less accurate as you go forward, especially when you're talking about being 6 to 7 months out. There's July. This particular pattern is very troubling to me when I see that in July, because this is usually when the monsoon sets up here from Mexico through New Mexico, Colorado, and it looks like most of that is kind of shoved down here to the south across western Mexico. And there's August. So with all that good news, let's look at some past events. I'm huge into the past. Most of the time, history's a pretty good teacher about where you're going to go forward if you can recognize what's happened. And with this event going to be a weak to moderate La Nina episode, we painted some stuff here for you. Again, this is November through March. This is what happened in 2016 and 2017 when we had a weak La Nina episode. So where you're seeing the greens and the blues, that's where it was really wet. And the browns, not so much. So again, California got lit up with record rain and snowfall last winter. And we did pretty well here in the plains, especially the western high plains. Farther east you get, it was a little bit tougher, obviously. This was a moderate La Nina, 2011 and 12. Again, November through March. It was dry out west. You were somewhat wet here in eastern Texas and through the Mississippi Valley. This is a strong La Nina episode. So again, let's just back that up for a second. So you had this 2016 and 17. Look at that. Completely different for a moderate La Nina episode. Okay. And then you kind of had this to deal with when you had a strong La Nina episode. Historically speaking, I think this is a little bit better tell where you're wetter up here, where the storm track is, and you're just simply drier south. Weak La Nina, 2008-2009. You can see where the dry areas were more prone to be. 2005-2006, painting what is called an analog year, looking at the past year and kind of pairing it up with what's happening right now and then kind of making that forecast going forward. Probably my favorite year out of all of that is 2005-2006 during this time. So this looks really similar to what a lot of the models and a lot of history suggests we should end up with. This wetness up here in Cali and Pacific Northwest, I'm not sold on for those reasons that I showed you a little while ago. And that's big for them because they had a great year last year. Like I said, record year, but that comes on the heels of some really awful years that they had out there. So if they miss out on another wet season, they're going to be right back where they started. People in California like water a little more than everybody else, too. 2000, 2001. And another fave of mine, 95, 96. I would say 95, 96 is probably running in second place in my mind, too, kind of what I think would happen. But the other thing that I want to drive home here is like, well, a lot of those maps were different. That's exactly right. Every episode is different, whether you've got a La Nina or an El Nino episode. And you could pick yourself out on a map and say, well, 1 year was wet, 1 year was dry. Again, there's variability in there. But for those of you that saw where it is usually drier than average with a La Nina episode, then that gives you a little bit more confidence. Again, usually the farther south and west you go, the drier you are. And also down on the Gulf Coast, they struggle with La Nina episodes too. So, my thoughts on this, La Nina episode's likely going to last for a little while. I don't think we're going to go to strong levels on it, but I definitely think it's going to be impactful. This is especially true in the southern plains, and the western plains for that matter. My gut says the farther north you live, the less dry you will be. Notice I didn't say the wetter you will be. Okay? The less dry you will be, because I think many of us in the plains are going to have some dry time, obviously for the reasons that I shared with you today. And given the recent dry trend, I'd be very cautious about overextending myself if I live in the plains. If your banker knows anything about this, they should be extremely cautious about lending you money if you live in the plains. That's just sound risk management on their behalf. Okay? Make sure your drought plan is solid and have it dusted off, pun intended. Okay? Because if you start guessing on this stuff, I was talking to my dad about this last weekend over Thanksgiving, and he can go buy some hay right now for $75 a ton delivered. It's pretty good hay. It's decent. If we start continuing this down this dry road, that $75 a ton hay is immediately going to go to $150 very quickly, like overnight type of a thing. If we get into March and we don't have a whole lot of snow and we're uncovered, you know, a lot of ranchers that have grass will be like, yeah, I didn't have to feed my cattle. Oh, wait a minute. I might have to feed those cattle in June. So again, having that drought plan and having that sound risk management plan for your business and throwing weather into that, that's all I do, okay? That's really all I'm about. So I've been doing this stuff for quite a while for my family, and when we had that tremendous drought that started in late 10 and went through about 13, we basically had to sell about everything. But we had a timetable that we were selling things on. If it does not rain by this date, X goes to town. Cull all the trash out of your herd. You know, those types of things. A lot of these things you guys already do, but you may not have it written down. Got to write it down. Have to. That's my contact info right there. Email me anytime on Twitter. I'm very big on Twitter because it's just such a cool way to communicate and have conversation as far as social media is concerned, I think. And if you need weather for your biz, just ask me for a quote. I partner with some guys in Denver, and we've got a little thing going called weather5280.com. We don't just do weather for agriculture interests. We do for transportation interests, energy, stuff like that as well. But my background is in agriculture. It's somewhat of a niche for me because I feel like I can walk into a room and talk to you and not really know anything about your business, but at least know what you're going to be concerned about and take the weather information that I have and maybe tailor it to your needs. Okay? So if you're interested in something like that, please give me a shout.